You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Wednesday to you. We got a lot to talk about today on our podcast, including Arkansas basketball. They've announced their exhibition dates for games against Kansas and TCU coming up here in the next month or so, leading up to the season. A little bit later in the show, we'll be joined by Andy Burcham. He is the play-by-play voice of the Auburn Tigers. We'll get a look at Auburn during our conversation with him. But first, Christina Long and I are here on the desk. We'll talk some Arkansas football. We'll talk some other things. And we'll begin with NIL, because that's still the topic of conversation, it feels like, in our state, after Hunter Yurecek's comments on Monday at the Little Rock Touchdown Club. And, Christina, I've been thinking about this. And I think the reason that this topic elicits such a strong emotional response is because it's personal to people. And, you know, I was thinking about how much college sports have changed even in the last 5 years. You know, 5 years ago, you could watch your team and you could expect them to win without being asked to foot the bill. You could, you know, you could buy tickets. You could donate to the scholarship fund, in Arkansas's case, the Razorback Foundation. But there was also a personal kickback there. You know, you might get better seats. You might get better parking. You got prioritized for what you gave voluntarily in some cases, maybe involuntarily as it related to, you know, donations being tied to tickets and things like that. And that expectation hasn't gone away from people on either side. The foundation, they still expect you to give that money. The ticket office, they still expect you to give that money. You still expect to get prioritized, but we don't see that in NIL. I mean, in NIL, you know, what are you doing? You're paying for a quarterback. You're paying for a left tackle. You're paying for a safety. Maybe paying for a first baseman. You may be paying for a starting point guard or something. And it just feels like that rubs people the wrong way. And that's why I think you get such an emotional response when it comes to NIL. I think what Hunter Yurecek said the other day, 100% spot on. He's just laying the facts out there for everybody that if you want to know why we as the Razorbacks are not competing with everybody else, here's why. We're not putting the same financial commitment into this, and honestly turning the mirror around saying you are not putting the same financial commitment into this as a Texas, as an Alabama, as a Georgia. That rubs people the wrong way, even if it's the correct, or even if it's not incorrect.
Well, and because it makes people feel like they're being blamed for on-field performance, and it's not their fault. I mean, like, you know, the average fan is not the reason for teams losing. Now, it can be the difference, obviously, financially in the kind of players you can get or that you can pay for, but I don't think people appreciate being told, hey, you're the reason that we're losing, not decisions we've made, not performance, not evaluation of players, things like that. Like, it's your fault, actually, and you don't give us enough money. And I don't think people appreciate hearing that at all. At the same time, I don't totally fault Yurecek for what he did, because his job is to raise money. Like, he kind of has to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't blame fans for being frustrated by it, but I also don't blame him for having to say it, because he has to raise the money. He has to get it from somewhere. Arkansas Edge, the collective, is underperforming relative to its SEC counterparts. They are not getting the same kind of money from fans that other programs are. That is a fact. He can't, pretending like that's not true is even more hurtful, I feel like, than being honest about, like, yeah, we are behind and we do need your help to catch up. I think it's worse to pretend like everything's fine and pretend that you're competitive when you're not.
And institutionally, Arkansas bears some responsibility for what's going on with the NIL. They were notoriously slow to get the collective off the ground. I've tried to figure out, and I was looking at the Grove Collective, and I was looking at One Arkansas, which was Arkansas's initial NIL collective, and trying to figure out when each of them launched. And from what I can tell, the Grove was established in December of 2021, launched in early 2022. Don't know if that was January, February. I haven't been able to figure that part out yet. From what I can tell, One Arkansas was launched in August of 2022. So, you know, you're, what, 7 months behind at least that collective, and I would figure the Grove probably wasn't the first collective that was launched. And then One Arkansas, for whatever reason, I don't know if you would say it was underperforming. I don't know exactly why they changed to Arkansas Edge, but then they do make that about face, say 16 months later, 15 months, somewhere in there, and they go to a new collective. And so Arkansas has had some missteps as it relates to its collective that affects what's going on with NIL.
Yeah, it's very strange, the situation that they've gotten into. And I just think, you know, I don't, like I said, I don't blame fans for being frustrated by it. I think it's also confusing. I think it was confusing when it changed to Arkansas Edge as opposed to One Arkansas. I think people are still confused about the difference between that and the foundation. I don't blame them. That was something I spoke with Chris Bauer, who's now the former executive director of Arkansas Edge. I spoke with him last spring, and he was talking about how one of the biggest battles they're fighting is just the getting people educated on what they actually do and the fact that they're different from the foundation. Not helped by the fact that their office is in the foundation building. They rent out an office space from the foundation because they're not part of the foundation. They pay the foundation for that office, whatever. But like that doesn't really help the situation. People are confused, and I don't blame them. I would be confused too if I didn't have to know about it for work. You know?
I cover this stuff, and I'm still confused about some of the elements as it relates to that. And I think something else that's confusing to people, especially with the House settlement being reported on so extensively, is revenue share and the fact that as it stands right now, an athletic department, even an athletic department employee. Let's say Sam Pittman said, hey, I want to help out. I don't think he could do it. I don't think he can. I don't think an athletic department employee can donate to NIL. So it literally has to come from people outside of that building, whether it be, you know, the budget that's inside that building and then even the people's personal income inside that building. It cannot go to helping NIL. And I think that that confuses people because college sports, they're becoming like pro sports. They're not quite there yet. But in pro sports, you know, you foot the bill. Hey, if you're a Cowboys fan or a Chiefs fan and you go out and you buy a jersey, maybe you go to the game and, you know, buy tickets, get some concessions, yeah, that helps them. That helps them probably whenever they're trying to restructure Patrick Mahomes' contract or Dak Prescott's contract. And, you know, maybe they're able to not take such a big hit against the salary cap, and they're able to give them a little bit bigger bonus. But you don't have that going on right now in college sports. It's so segmented the way the college game is set up right now. I don't think it's sustainable. I think it's very confusing. I think it's pushing people away from college football, at least in terms of how much they care about it. It's a tough situation.
Yeah, and I feel like the other thing, I've kind of seen two sort of reactions to this. One of which is, if this is what it takes, I'll up my donation. I will join now. You know, like I did see a lot of people on our message board talking about, you know, there was an ongoing discussion over the two sides of this. And some people were saying, I'm going to call right now and join and up my donation, you know. So it seems like Yurecek's speech kind of, it worked for some people. But then there's the other reaction of, you know, why should I donate to a team that's not performing? Why should I donate to a coach I don't believe in? And I think I've seen a lot of reaction of like, I'm not going to donate. As long as Sam Pittman is a coach, I'm not going to donate. And I think it's, you know, people can have that reaction. It's their money. They do with it what they will. But I just think it's sort of an odd response, I guess, because there's also, you know, if we had a different coach, you know, like once we hire XYZ coach, then I'll donate. Well, what happens if slash when that coach has a season that you are disappointed in and they don't win as much? Like, what's the level you want them to reach at which you will consider it worth your money to donate? And that's different for every person, because every person, how they value their money is different. But it's just like, say they bring in some other coach, that coach has a bad season or maxes out at, you know, 8 wins, 9 wins, whatever. Are you then going to go, until we get a different new coach, I'm canceling? Maybe you are. And that's your decision. But it's interesting to see that response and then to think, okay, play that out further. Play that out of, you get your wish and you get a different coach. Then what?
I heard somebody say that Yurecek's speech the other day sounded like a pastor giving a sermon on tithing.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. And then they come around with the dish, and you put your check in. Yeah.
I mean, they can pass the plate when Arkansas plays Tennessee in Fayetteville in a couple of weeks. But that's what this is. It's like you're being asked to tithe to your team. You know, whether it's $100, whether it's $50, I don't know what the different financial levels are that you can
it starts at 25, and I know he said something about, you know, we need everybody, you know, if we got $100 from X number of people. Arkansas Edge on their, have their website up right now, on their like join page, it starts, it's 25, 50, 100, and 250 a month. And it gets you various perks and whatever. So it does start at 25. Some people can do that. I don't know if there's like one-off donations that you can make. Like if you wanted to just do like, hey, I give you, you know, $100 today. I don't need like a monthly thing. I don't know if that's an option. But as far as their like monthly memberships, it starts at 25 and goes up to 250.
And all this is happening when the price of living just stinks.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and I feel like athletic departments, not they have not been totally absolved from the economic realities around them. But I feel like for a good bit of maybe the last however long, they just kind of played with Monopoly money. That was the feeling I got, because they had so much money coming in, and a lot of them operate as 501c3s, that there has to be, you know, that money has to go back out to certain places. And now the economic reality is starting to set in a little bit. Maybe not so much, obviously, yet with the athletic departments, although it's going to when revenue sharing begins. But there's an economic reality here that, and it goes back to the large market, small market analogy that I've made in the past, that if you're in a small state like ours, where incomes are not extremely high, you know, on like a household average, where the population's not very high, it's going to be an uphill climb unless you have a situation, say like Ole Miss, where they've got a strong grassroots effort that has been put together to compete with the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Ohio States. You know, if you're in a large market, the economic realities, they're maybe less likely to affect you because there's a larger population pool to draw from. In our state, boy, it's tough, it feels like, for the Razorbacks. It just feels like it's going to be an uphill climb. Maybe revenue share helps the Razorbacks to a certain extent because they do have that SEC affiliation, and so they're going to be able to share more revenue than maybe some of the other programs that are out there. But NIL's not going away. NIL's going to complement what happens with revenue share. In fact, the judge, Claudia Wilkin, who's overseeing this case, she's indicated that NIL might even be more freewheeling in this new world that we're going to step into once the House settlement takes effect, if indeed it does take effect.
Right. And I think that's something that's getting lost. I think when the House settlement first kind of came out, there was a discussion of, is this going to kill the collective? Like, will that go away? And it really won't. I mean, maybe it will change how it's structured, but it won't get rid of NIL. NIL will be kind of the sweetener on top, because you have the revenue share, which I think we've established is, you know, schools will be up to about $22 million. Now, not every school is going to pay $22 million or $20 million or whatever it is. Not every school is going to do that. Not every school can. But first, you know, you can bet Alabama will. You can bet Georgia will. I don't know what Arkansas will do. And so for schools, there's going to be separation in how much of that amount they're actually sharing. That's the cap, is the 20 to 22. So how much is actually getting used? And then if schools are using the max, well, on top of that, they're also going to put in whatever their collective has and whatever kind of NIL deals they're able to add on top of that. So there's still going to be that competitive gap with collectives. And so I think we're going to see this be different, but still very, very important.
Don't you get the feeling that college football is just meaning less to people now? There's like less of an emotional appeal to people than there used to be?
I don't feel that yet. I think it's different. I don't feel like it's a dramatic drop off right now. I think it's, there's definitely a shift. There's definitely a change.
I think it starts with the cost to attend games.
Sure.
It's at an all time high if you want to go to a game. You know, whether that's, I know a lot of people who, they don't buy season tickets. They just say, hey, I'm going to go to one game a year, because it's a little bit better to pay overvalue on a good ticket for a game against a good opponent than to stay in a hotel and drive in or fly in, you know, pay $6 for a Coke, $9 for a beer.
$20 to park if, you know, if not more.
$20. Where are you parking?
Well, for 20 if you want to hike
in Greenland? Man, I was driving in the other day and I saw $50 signs, oh my gosh, like not too far. I mean, it's, but you know, you got $4 hot dogs and you sit on metal bleachers, and it's just better to do that one time a year than to do it six or seven times. I know multiple people who have that line of thinking. And then, you know, you add this NIL deal on top of that. You know, if you're a recent graduate, I doubt you're too involved in NIL. You're worried about...
I don't have any friends that donate to Missouri's collective. Yeah, that's where I went. And
what are you worried about? You're worried about paying for Netflix. Yeah. You're worried about making your car payment.
You know?
And your rent. Yeah, it's exactly right. You know, maybe you're a little bit further removed from that. You know, maybe you're in my stage of life, and you're worried about buying diapers and daycare. You know, I mean, and a home mortgage. That's the reality, I think, that the schools have to face. And it goes back to the fact that I just don't know that they've had to face these economic realities in such a harsh way any time really in the past.
Yeah,
at least in the fairly recent past.
Right. And it's giving money to something that isn't really perceived as charitable, because lots of people, I know people my age who donate to charities, but it's giving something that you don't really get anything tangible out of. Like, I saw a tweet. It was very funny. I don't remember who it was, or I would credit them, but a fan had tweeted, you know, we pay, and they listed out like all these, you know, $40 for parking, this much for drinks, this much for tickets, whatever, this much for the collective. We get 4 and 8 seasons and an Arkansas Edge keychain. And it was very funny and like very true. You know, like that's how it's viewed by a lot of people. Yeah. It's like, what am I getting out of this? Especially at this point with how Arkansas season went last year, how, you know, it remains to be seen how the rest of this year goes. Just that's kind of the perception and the argument against, you know, what am I getting out of this? You know, it's hard to want to throw money into something that doesn't feel like a charitable act necessarily, and also you don't get anything in return, anything tangible or anything really that benefits you.
And there's never enough money.
No.
There's never enough money. You know, like in the old days, you might go out and you go on a fundraising drive to renovate the stadium or to, you know, build a football complex or something. And now, you know, and it would be, they're trying to raise tens of millions of dollars for Project X. Now you're trying to raise tens of million dollars every year to put together a roster. And I don't know how much football teams are spending. I think I've got a fairly decent idea. I don't want to throw a number out there and it be totally off. But you know, if you're thinking about campus-wide, I do think that it's safe to say that you're in the tens of millions that you're trying to come up with in NIL funds. You know, and like using the building project as an example, you knew that at a certain point, whether it be $80 million or $20 million or $160 million or whatever the case might be, that the building was going to get built. And there was not going to be any more money that was going to be thrown into that project. Now, maybe the building gets renovated again somewhere down the road, but that project is over. There is a financial cap there. There's none of that in NIL because there's never enough money. And I don't know that there ever will be enough money. And that, if it sounds hopeless, it kind of feels hopeless, I feel like, for these small schools and maybe even some of the larger schools. You know, hey, give Tennessee some credit. They're not making any bones about what they're trying to do. You know, this 10% talent fee on top of your tickets. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that everywhere moving forward at some point, because I think what schools are going to run into is that I said this yesterday, people are going to say, I'm tapped out. Yeah. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And so you're going to start trying to figure out, how do I tie this to the game-going experience? And those people who go to games typically are the people who may have the finances that can, you know, I mean, obviously they're going to have to be able to afford these types of fees. But that's why NFL tickets are so expensive. It's why professional sports tickets are so expensive. They got to pay the bills. You know, they got to pay the payroll. And I think you're going to see that in college moving forward.
Yeah. And I mean, if they could get to a point where right now, under the current rules, it's not allowed. This was something I asked Chris Bauer, the former director of Arkansas Edge, about in the spring, was it can't be tied up into your, you know, ticket benefits the way that a foundation donation is. It's by rule, it's not allowed to be part of that. You can't get benefits like that for how much you donate to a collective. That's something that maybe we see change in the future. Who's to say? But so that's also a frustration for fans, is you want me to give to the foundation so that I can get tickets, so that I can do all this stuff, and you want me to donate to this other thing that doesn't get me any tangible benefit. And so, you know, and I don't, that's an obvious frustration. And so that's something that it's, I think they would probably love to have that be a thing, because I think that would really incentivize people, but it's not allowed right now. And I think that's something that we could see change. But the Tennessee talent fee is interesting to me, and it's an example of a lot of other schools doing things to advance their collectives. Like Oklahoma State was going to do the QR codes on the helmets, and NCAA shut that down. But on the video boards at Boone Pickens, there were every once in a while would flash the QR code up. Mm-hmm. We went to Smitty's to get a burger after the game. Coasters at the bar had the collective QR code, the QR code to join or donate or whatever, at the restaurant near the stadium. It was crazy.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I did see the QR codes inside the stadium all around the place. It goes back to the age thing. I think that, you know, the people who are footing the bill for the most part right now, they care. They have an emotional attachment to their college team. The younger people, I don't know that they're going to have that emotional attachment. And I just think that college, administrators, while making decisions that are trying to keep them relevant in the current age, are making misstep after misstep after misstep that I fear is going to hurt college sports down the road. Because college sports, it's all about that emotional attachment, right? If you don't have that emotional attachment, it changes things. And so I don't know. It worries me. That's a little bit of a dark segment to start off our show today. I want to tell you that Hunter Juracek is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club next Wednesday, September 25th. I'm sure we'll talk to him about this. At Home 2 Suites in Springdale, you can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. Hunter Juracek at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. When we come back, we are going to talk a little bit about football. We've got Andy Burcham coming up at the end of the show to talk about Auburn. Christina and I will also talk about Arkansas-Auburn matchup on Saturday, and we'll get into a little bit of this basketball exhibition news with the Razorbacks playing Kansas and TCU coming up on a couple of Fridays in the upcoming weeks. But first, a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We'll try to get happier as we go on throughout the show. We want to tell you about our friends over at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They're your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Arkansas and Auburn on Saturday, 2:30 kickoff. It'll be on ESPN. The Razorbacks are a slight underdog in this game, 2.5-point underdog. ESPN's FPI gives Auburn about a 58% chance to win the game, which kind of surprised me a little bit. But, you know, I guess there's renewed hope at Auburn because they don't have Peyton Thorne as their quarterback. Hank Brown came in and played a good game against a totally overmatched New Mexico team. I watched New Mexico during that week zero, and they lost to Montana State at home. That's not a very good team, and so Auburn – whatever you think about Arkansas, this is easily going to be the best lineup, best roster that Hank Brown has played against, because the only other team he played against, I think he came in mop-up duty against Alabama A&M early in the season. I won't go into my FCS rant today. But he's going to be challenged, I feel like, against Arkansas. And I think that, I've always believed that when you're facing a quarterback who's a fairly new quarterback, and he is a redshirt freshman, but who hasn't been out there, in a big game, in a big moment like this, you got to really put pressure on him. And Arkansas's had pressure, or they've had problems putting pressure on quarterbacks this year. I'm really interested to see how they approach this, because to me, if you've got a new quarterback and you want to get pressure on him and you've had trouble getting pressure on the quarterback against lesser opponents, you got to get creative with your blitzes. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's what we see on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Sam Pittman has emphasized the importance of needing to get to the quarterback ever since, you know, they had the 4 sacks against UAPB in week 1. And then after that, they've had 1 since, I think. And yeah, they didn't really, right. You know, and he talked about how, you know, Alan Bowman from Oklahoma State was a difficult man to sack because of his running and because of Oklahoma State's offensive line. So sure. But then UAB, you also don't get pressure on Jacob Zeno. So it's just, it's been weird to see that, especially when you have a guy like Landon Jackson. Now he's facing a lot of double teams. They don't really have another guy on the defensive line who has stepped up as a threat in a way that would relieve that pressure on Jackson. And so that's something Pittman has emphasized that they need to do. But this feels like a good opportunity for them to try to do that. Pittman talked about how Peyton Thorne, who Auburn benched, was a little bit more mobile than Hank Brown is, and Hank Brown is a little bit more stand-in, you know. So if they can get to this redshirt freshman, I think they have a good chance at success. I mean, like you said, it's still new to him. He, you know, he was good against New Mexico, but like you said, it was New Mexico. So this is going to be kind of where we start to learn a little bit about him, and also hopefully for Arkansas, where we start to learn what this defense can do in the SEC.
The bettors were sending Peyton Thorne messages on Venmo asking him for money.
Which is so gross.
Now, he didn't play against New Mexico, and they missed the line by a half a point. It was a 26.5-point line. They only win by 26.
Wow, any Venmo requests for Hank Brown?
That's what I was, you know, it's like, or Peyton Thorne.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works. For Arkansas, I didn't feel like they were prepared. I don't know if prepared is the right way. I don't think they were inspired to play UAB the other day. I think they were prepared. You do listen back through, and you kind of, I don't know, you analyze what happened throughout the week leading up to the game. Travis Williams was out for at least one practice, and I guess he was in and out of the building the rest of the week after his wife gave birth to their latest child. You had a lot of defensive players who were in green jerseys throughout the week. You heard Landon Jackson even kind of mention that to a certain extent, or at least it sounded like that's what he was alluding to when he said, you know, when you practice slow, it's going to carry over into a game. And so I would suspect that they learned some lessons about how they approached the UAB week last week, because they've still got players who are out. Hudson Clark's doubtful to play, Sam Pittman said the other day. But I wonder if they learned some lessons last week about how to approach this game. And then obviously when you're playing your SEC opener, it's not a team that you're expected to beat, even though I think Arkansas can win the game. You're not a 24.5-point favorite like they were against UAB. I think that sometimes you think you can just put the shoulder pads on and show up and take care of business. UAB showed that that was not the case. This week, I just feel like Auburn's going to get a better preparation from Arkansas.
Right. I think that's very true. And I think I'll be interested to ask Coach Pittman after the game or maybe next week, just how was practice different in terms of who was available and how did they, if there were players unavailable, a lot of guys in green, mm-hmm. what did they do to make it a different week? You know, because you don't want to, you know, guys that you need for Saturday, you don't want to put them at risk in practice, obviously. So then it's, how do you work around that? What did you do differently from UAB week to Auburn week to work around that problem? How did you kind of solve it? So we spoke with them Monday, so obviously they hadn't had a lot of practice yet, but I expect a better prepared, I guess, to use that word, prepared team for this. I think, you know, we've shown that they can perform on the road. Obviously, it was a loss at Oklahoma State, but, you know, some good play in the first half. They have it in them. They just have to sustain it.
You heard this talk. People who said that fans and media are being too negative after the fact that Arkansas beat UAB the other day. You know, to which I said,
did it feel like a win?
Well, to which I said, I mean, did you listen to Sam Pittman's comments after the game? Did that sound like a coach who had just won a game? He said they were disappointed in the lack of domination. I was listening to his halftime interview on the Razorback Sports Network, and he was really discouraged at that point. He said, we ought to be thumping these guys. He used the word thumping. Landon Jackson after the game, he said, I mean, it was as blunt of a quote as you could find. He said, if we play like this, any SEC team's going to beat the hell out of us. And, I mean, so this is not just fans and reporters looking for, you know, something to be negative about. The coaches and the players didn't like what they saw on the field the other day. They felt like they should have beat UAB by a whole lot more than what they did.
Yeah, and if they were being positive about it after the game and having a win is a win attitude, everybody would light them up for that. Everybody
Club Dub was so shut down after Arkansas beat UAB.
Everybody would be so mad.
That's what
that
kind of felt like watching that game was Colorado State, the Club Dub game. You weren't here when that happened, but it was kind of a similar game. It was real tight, you know, to a certain point, and then I think Arkansas pulled away. They might have even scored 21 straight in the fourth quarter. Can't remember exactly how that worked, but I know it was a very tight game, and it came the year after they had lost to Colorado State up in Fort Collins. And, of course, Chad Morris, he celebrated his last victory at Arkansas in style. But it was just a totally different feeling because those two games felt, and maybe it's the fact that UAB wore helmets that looked like Colorado State's that day. I don't know. But it was to me, it felt, as I was watching that game, I felt like, man, I'm watching Colorado State all over again. And so you take the feeling after the Colorado State game, and I understand the program was in a different place then than it is now, but you're right. It didn't feel like they were really celebrating a win. It was almost like they were just kind of exhaling that they didn't lose a game.
Yeah, and I think that's better. I think it's better to take a game that you should have dominated and you didn't. You shouldn't take that as like, all right, that's behind us, whatever, we got the win, we survived. Like, you should take lessons from that. You should be frustrated by the things you did wrong. You should be very relieved and glad that you won, but you should also be taking things from that into the tougher games on your schedule, because that game, they made that game tougher than it needed to be, and they can't afford to do that in games that are already, the toughness is starting higher, you know?
Yeah. Let's transition here to basketball real quick. Basketball practice. We believe basketball practice begins next Wednesday at Bud Walton Arena. Well, I don't know if it'll be in the arena, maybe in the practice facility, but you get the point. We think basketball practice begins for the Razorbacks next Wednesday because it'll be 6 weeks out from what we think is going to be their season opener. We don't have a full schedule yet, but we think the season opener is going to be November 6th against Lipscomb. That's going to be on a Wednesday night, the night after the election. You can't play on the night of the general election. They have made a rule where you can play the night before it, but it doesn't look like Arkansas is going to play on that November 4th date. And there is a game in Bud Walton Arena that night, I believe, for the women's basketball team, which would certainly lead us to believe that November 6th is the date. Neither here nor there. Arkansas has set exhibition dates for sure against Kansas and TCU. John Calipari mentioned that these were possibilities several weeks ago, back in July. But the dates are in. Kansas, October 25th at Bud Walton Arena. We don't have a tip-off time yet, but obviously you would expect that would be kind of a primetime tip-off on a Friday night. And then they will go to Fort Worth, Texas on the next Friday night to take on TCU. That'll be November 1st at Dickey's Arena, which is the new arena that they've built in downtown Fort Worth. It's not TCU's home arena, but it is the arena, so like when the NCAA tournament comes through, that they'll play basketball in. So Kansas, October 25th, TCU, November 1st. Obviously, these are two really good Big 12 basketball programs. Kansas is as elite can get. Calipari and Bill Self obviously have got a long relationship, whether it be through games or, you know, obviously they went into the Hall of Fame around the same time. I'm sure that they've worked on basketball-related, you know, projects off the floor. This is a cool deal, Arkansas and Kansas. It's the second year in a row where you look at Arkansas' schedule and say, wow, the best game may be their preseason exhibition game at home.
I mean, yeah, it's crazy. It's an exciting game. It's great that it'll be here at Bud Walton Arena. That's super exciting for Arkansas fans. I think charity exhibitions like this are really cool. I mean, Missouri, when I was in college, Missouri did one against Kansas in Kansas City, and it was an awesome event. It was for tornado relief, I believe, and they raised a ton of money. It was a super cool game. Since that rivalry didn't get played anymore, you know, it was packed in that arena. So, I mean, I think this will be really cool. It is funny. It's like you'll go from those two games to then, all right, now we got to get up for Lipscomb. But, I mean, they do. They play Baylor and Dallas right after that, so that'll be, you know,
but it's better than playing the EA Sports All-Stars. Or Arkansas Monticello or, you know, Southeast Oklahoma Central State or whatever it is. I mean,
and they have good non-conference.
And it gets you prepared for your season more.
Totally, totally. And that's something, you know, we've talked about. We won't get fully on your FCS soapbox.
Please
but that's
don't.
Something you've talked about with football. And so, you know, and Arkansas has some good actual regular season non-conference games, you know, Baylor, Illinois, Michigan, you know, teams like that that'll be good games for the early season instead of just, you know, Maryland Eastern Shore and, you know, things like that. So I think these are great games. I think it's really exciting. I look forward to being there.
FCS football hit an all-time low last week, by the way. South Alabama beat Northwestern State 87-10, and they played the fourth quarter a six-minute running clock.
Oh, my God.
Now, Northwestern State, they've got some – they're in a kind of an interesting situation. They had a player who passed away during the season last year. Their coach resigned because of the emotional stress that it took on him, and they canceled the rest of the season.
Wow.
So it's a unique situation there. But there are so many instances this year where we've seen – and you got me on my soapbox.
I know. I said I wasn't going to.
I wasn't going to go here. But there are so many instances this year, whether it be Arkansas, UAPB, or you know Tennessee and whoever they played, Ole Miss and whoever they played, Furman – we could have seen a lot of 100-point victories this year. We really could have.
Yeah.
It's just so. Hey, kudos to Arkansas basketball. Yeah. I'm gonna calm
and
down
I think
here.
It's I for think playing these good games competition. Are, right. These games are great, and I think I will say though, how much will it tell us about the team? Because Arkansas beat Purdue in exhibition last year, and then kind of stunk it up.
They
so
also
I don't
beat
know.
Duke early in the
That's
year.
True.
Something
That's
happened
true.
In the middle
That's
of the
true.
Year. I can't quite figure out what happened
so,
there. The wheels fell off.
It was just funny, like throughout that season, everybody kept going back to, but this team beat Purdue. How is this the same team that beat Purdue? So hopefully for Arkansas fans, Arkansas kind of avoids that a similar trajectory if they're to win some of these exhibitions. But I mean, they're exciting games. Like you said, it's a chance to learn about the team, for them to play some other competition, for them to learn about themselves.
The Must Bus hit some tire spikes last year after that Duke game. Real quick, Razorback Foundation members are going to get a priority to get these tickets beginning, I believe, tomorrow on Thursday. Yeah, that's what this says. And then all of the other seats will come open on September 25th. That's next Wednesday. Arkansas will donate some proceeds from the game to Arkansas Children's Hospitals, both here in Little Rock and in Springdale. And Kansas is going to donate its proceeds to the For the Kids Foundation, which is a partner of a children's hospital in Kansas City. One other note real quick before we get to Andy Burcham from Auburn. Arkansas and LSU soccer play on Thursday night, and the Razorbacks are ranked number 3 this week. That ties the highest ranking in program history. We've talked about this with Anthony a little bit in previous podcasts. It's the highest scoring team in the country right now. Arkansas is now not a very strong non-conference schedule, but they're the highest scoring team, and they start SEC play very rested tomorrow night. I think it's been like 11 days since the soccer teams played a game. That's a pretty cool deal for them.
Yeah, it's really exciting. The highest ranking in program history for a program that's been really strong for a while now. So, I mean, yeah, starting SEC play, I'll be curious how they do after, like you said, kind of a less exciting non-conference, but they managed to score a lot, so we'll see how that carries over.
If they can dominate the SEC the way they have in the past several years, like they've won 4 of the last 5 SEC championships, you're looking at potentially a team that could – you know, have some real good home field advantage in the NCAA postseason. A lot of time between now and then. The SEC is a really good soccer conference. Okay, when we come back, Andy Burcham, the play-by-play voice of the Auburn Tigers, will join us to talk about Auburn's football team as they get ready for Arkansas. But first, into the word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on-site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We're joined now by Andy Burcham. He is the play-by-play voice of the Auburn Tigers. The Razorbacks and Auburn will square off this weekend, Saturday at 2:30 down on the Plains. Andy, thanks for being here.
Matt, it's good to be with you. Looking forward to the Hogs coming down here on Saturday afternoon.
What's the mood around Auburn this week?
I think a little bit of relief after getting a win last week against New Mexico and Hank Brown's first start as Auburn's quarterback. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of question marks about the team. I don't think anyone's real thrilled with the way the defense played, especially in the first half against New Mexico. But Brown had a good opening game for Auburn. And now, you know, this is right in the middle of five straight home games for Auburn. And now you get the SEC. And for Auburn, the next three games are Arkansas, Oklahoma, and at Georgia. So all three really tough games for Auburn to open up before it gets to its first bye week of the season.
I want to ask you about Hank Brown and just what went into the change at quarterback last week when you played in New Mexico. And how would you assess his play?
I thought his play was efficient in the first game. Did not throw a pick, had four touchdowns, a couple drops on a night where in the second quarter, it started raining pretty hard through halftime. The rain let up in the second half, and Auburn scored four straight touchdowns in the second half of play. It was not a decision that Hugh Freeze made quickly or took lightly. This is not something that I'm not sure he wanted to do, frankly, is to move from Peyton Thorne to Hank Brown. He just could not get past the game that Peyton had against Cal with four interceptions and some decisions made in that game. It wasn't just bad throws. It was bad decisions made. And it has happened before. He's had some very good games, but I think he had not seen this at times a year ago in Peyton Thorne's first year. I don't know if he makes the move to Hank Brown last week, but it really started with him Monday, and he told the press about it on Monday, and then by Friday morning he had notified the two quarterbacks and Auburn was going to start Hank Brown against New Mexico, and he will start this Saturday against Arkansas.
It's ironic timing because Hank's high school coach was Trent Dilfer, and that's who Arkansas just played last week against UAB. Played for him at Lipscomb Academy up in Nashville, won a couple of state championships together. Is there anything about Hank's play, like any characteristics about him that you can see where he had maybe a more advanced level of coaching as a high school player?
I think his progressions is something that you see out of him, and I'm sure he benefited greatly to having Trent Dilfer as his high school coach. He was recruited by Hugh Freeze when Hugh Freeze was at Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
So he has been recruiting Hank Brown for a long time, and then when he made the move to Auburn, he extended the scholarship offer to Hank. And Hank's really kind of a laid-back individual. He made really good throws, really good decisions. One of the things that Hugh Freeze told us on Tiger Talk on Monday was the fact that he did not miss one of his run checks at all. Mm. He was perfect on his run check this past week. And in part, Auburn had its best running game of the young season on Saturday. So I think the decisions he made, it was one time he threw across his body. And that's a bad choice. Auburn wasn't hurt by it, but that's something that was certainly brought up in film study with him. But he's a young man that really, I thought, handled his first college start very, very well. And now we'll see what he does in an SEC game, because the competition certainly picks up starting Saturday with the Hogs rolling into town.
Your quarterback play gets magnified, and obviously that's, you saw that play out in the last week down there with the change in quarterback. But the loss to Cal, were there other things on the field that stood out to you, and did you see improvements from Auburn, say from the loss to Cal to last week against New Mexico in those areas?
Auburn had a better run game this past week against the defense that it should have had a better run game against. Mm-hmm. Cal's defense is pretty salty. And Auburn did not run the ball particularly well, certainly did not pass it. And yet, and with five turnovers in that game, Auburn had the ball three times in the last 6 minutes with a chance to tie the game against Cal. Auburn's defense improved greatly from the first quarter to halftime of that game. And we saw the same thing this past week against New Mexico. The problem is if you're not strong from the get-go, starting this Saturday, what's the score at halftime against an Arkansas or an Oklahoma or Georgia or whomever Auburn faces in the future. That, I think, is a concern. Auburn's got to get off to a good start on the defensive side of the ball. And it's a young, relatively inexperienced secondary that they're still doing some shuffling. And I know that's a concern with the way Tylan Green runs and throws the football on Saturday. And not just to his receivers, but out of the backfield, to his tight ends as well. He is a concern for Auburn because a week ago against New Mexico, Auburn faced Dampier, who was 5'10", but still a really good dual threat quarterback. Mm-hmm. Green is a different quarterback because he's also 6'6" and big and can run and throw. And I think that concerns Auburn greatly going into Saturday.
Auburn came here to Fayetteville last year, and they just ran circles around Arkansas. I mean, they could have named their score. They took all the starters out pretty much at the end of the third quarter. It was 48-3 at that point. Jarquez Hunter had a real big day here last year. He's back. Do you see this offense being – is it got a running identity to it, or is it different than what we saw last year?
No, it is still a running identity. And Jarquez is one of the best backs in the Southeastern Conference. And obviously Auburn faces the guy that leads the SEC in rushing. Mm-hmm. Coming in this week. Listen, last year surprised me of the domination for Auburn there in Fayetteville. And listen, 2 years ago here at Jordan-Hare Stadium was the last game that Brian Harsin coached as Auburn's head coach. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, this is an odd series in that of late, since 2021, the average margin of victory in Auburn-Arkansas series is over 20 points. Which is odd in a Southeastern Conference game when you're not facing an Alabama or a Georgia, mm-hmm. for example. This series has been rather odd of late. The team that has won has typically won really big of late. I don't think that happens Saturday. I don't think. I didn't think it would happen last year either, mm-hmm. quite frankly, but it did.
Yeah, both of those teams were kind of hard to figure out last year. Auburn, they beat Arkansas, then they go home, and you lose by 3 touchdowns to New Mexico State. Hard to just figure out how all of that happened. DJ Durkin's the defensive coordinator there. He spent last year with Bobby Petrino at Texas A&M. I wonder what he's done for the Auburn defense through 3 games.
I think there's an edge to the Auburn defense from a talent standpoint. Auburn's not where it wants to be defensively right now. And Hugh Freeze didn't pull any punches. When he came here a year and a half ago, he said he thought it would take 3 solid recruiting classes. Solid, good recruiting classes from a talent standpoint for Auburn to get where it needed to be to contend in the SEC. And this first full recruiting class, we're seeing some of these youngsters that are playing a lot of minutes early. But I think he still feels he's got to get another one in here to really compete. And we're starting to see that a little bit defensively. I think at this time next year, we'll be talking about the secondary as a strength of Auburn because of the experience that it's getting right now. But I like the edge that DJ Durkin has brought. He has a lot of guys up front that are transfers. It'll be interesting on Saturday with the transfer offensive line. And that's the first thing, by the way, that's the first thing Hugh Freeze talked about in his press conference on Monday. It wasn't quarterback. It wasn't tailback. It wasn't defensive end. He talked about the improvement offensively up front for Arkansas. That is something that has caught his eye. Right now. So there are a lot of transfers up front for Arkansas, and there are a lot of transfers on the other side for Auburn up front. They're trying to find that identity for Auburn up front defensively.
Saturday is going to be a homecoming of sort for Travis Williams. He grew up in South Carolina, but you know, he played at Auburn. He's been there as a GA. He's been there as a position coach. He's been there as a coordinator. So much of his life has been spent there in Auburn. What do you remember about him as a player, as a coach, and your thoughts about just what he's done for his career?
Well, he was part of that 2020 or 2004 team that went through the SEC undefeated. Mm-hmm. They'll be celebrating that reunion a little bit later on in the season. And he was, as a linebacker, he was an undersized linebacker. Not in his head, though. He was just a fabulous player for Auburn. And was incredibly popular as a player, as a coach here. He was beloved, is beloved at Auburn. It'll be good to see him back, even though he'll be on the other sideline. I wish nothing but the best for T-Will, because every time you had a chance to be with him and talk with him as a player, or whether it was as a coach was a delight. It was a delight for me, that for certain.
Auburn's so much about family. You know, the culture there is so family-based. Right. And it's not just – we're not just talking about the team. It's the entire fan base. When you see one of your own go off and do well, even if it's at an SEC rival, I mean, is there a sense of pride?
I think so, especially for guys that played here and now have moved into the college ranks. I mean, you look at Joe Witt Jr., who played here. His dad was a legendary coach. Matter of fact, he coached Travis Williams at Auburn. Joe Witt Sr. Now Joe Witt Jr. is the defensive coordinator for the Washington Commanders and is doing very well. Absolutely. When you see a guy that is succeeding, even if it's not on that Auburn sideline, I think there's a certain amount of pride that goes with that, to be sure.
You said that you mentioned that Coach Freeze, he talked about the offensive line being something that stood out to him. How much have you been able to see Arkansas, and what are your own eyes tell you about how this team looks different?
Well, I think they're better up front. I like the way they run the football. I mean, I don't think that was necessarily the identity of the team a year ago. And it's not just Jackson running the football, although he's running it better than anyone in the SEC thus far. It's what Todd and Green can bring to that as well, as a big, 6'6", 230-pound quarterback that can hurt you as much with his legs as he does with his arm, and that's considerable. To me, that's the big difference in this offense this year, is the identity that they bring in with running the football. And that seems to follow in Sam Pittman's, he's an offensive line guy. So I think they're better up front. I think they're running the football a lot better this year.
It sounds elementary, Andy, but it almost feels like whoever can run the ball and stop the run Saturday, that's going to be the team that has the best chance to win.
How many times have you talked about, well, this game will come down to the trenches?
Mm-hmm.
And it may sound like a cliche, but I really believe that's the case. Auburn did not win the war in the trenches against Cal, and it cost them. Not only did Peyton Thorne have a little trouble throwing the ball, but he was under pressure a lot in that game. And if that's the case for Hank Brown this week, that's a concern, because the one thing that Hank Brown, we know, does not have the ability that Peyton Thorne did, and that's running the football. I mean, Peyton Thorne was surprisingly good as a running quarterback for Auburn. With Hank Brown, I don't think Auburn quite has that arsenal in its offense for him to run. He didn't have to last week against New Mexico. It's going to be fascinating to see one time when he has to get out and run the football, because we just haven't seen him have to do that yet. I think he'll get a lot more pressure this week, to be sure.
Andy, let's get you out of here on this. Switching gears for just a second, basketball season is right around the corner. I think Auburn, it's just like Arkansas. The practice begins next week. Team practice begins in advance of the November start date. What does Bruce Pearl's team look like this year based on what you've seen and what you've heard?
10 seniors. Wow. How many times have you heard in college basketball these days a team that has 10 seniors and nine of which are going to play a lot of minutes for Auburn. And it starts up front with Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell. We may see both of those guys on the floor at the same time this year underneath for Auburn. Auburn's non-conference, we've never seen a non-conference schedule at Auburn like the one that Auburn plays this year, with Houston in Houston in a neutral site game, Purdue in Birmingham, Duke at Duke, Ohio State in Atlanta this year. All of those games come away from Neville Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start Southeastern Conference play. And I think the Southeastern Conference this year is loaded this year. And as he said, you could be a top 30 team nationally and still be eighth or ninth in the Southeastern Conference going into this season, which says a lot about how good this conference has become in basketball.
Feels a little bit like SEC football and SEC baseball, which I know you're well aware
Absolutely.
Of. Arkansas,
absolutely, it does.
Arkansas comes down there with John Calipari to Neville Arena in mid-February. I bet that'll be a pretty packed house.
It doesn't matter if he's wearing Kentucky blue or Arkansas red. That will be a game that is circled by a lot of folks coming in here in the basketball season. That'll be a fun day.
That'll be a lot of fun. Andy, we appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Matt. Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Andy Burcham, the play-by-play voice of the Auburn Tigers. We appreciate him joining us, and we appreciate you being with us. We'll be back with another podcast on Thursday to continue looking forward to Arkansas and Auburn. Until then, hope you'll visit our website at wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everyone.